Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
Today we'll be talking about the topic of innovation systems. So Jörg, do you maybe want to start off by saying why we are talking about innovation systems at all?
Well, I think the main reason is the fact that over the past 20 years, research has discovered that innovation is not something that happens in an isolated way, just based on the insights of one company, one entrepreneur, or some people in a research lab, but that so many different factors and actors are interacting in creating innovation, irrespective of whether we are talking about incremental changes, small improvements, or whether we are talking about big improvements, big leaps in terms of technology or completely new business models or whatever. So this innovation is always shaped by the system conditions. It's happening inside a system that consists of a couple of different elements that reinforce each other, that feed back into each other. And in order to understand why innovation is happening and how it is happening and what we can maybe do to improve the innovation performance somewhere, we need to understand the innovation system.
So I think it would be important then to note that innovation systems exist and emerge even in places where there isn't an official understanding or an innovation system. So can you maybe explain that a little bit?
Well, I think we should come back to that point later in the conversation as well when we've explained the elements of an innovation system. But let us just start by highlighting that an innovation system is not something fancy that consists of hugely competitive companies and very shiny laboratories and things like that only. So we do have innovation systems pretty much everywhere where we have innovation. And innovation could be technical change. So new methods being used in producing something, new machinery being used in producing something, new products being produced, or new services being generated. And that applies to just about anywhere on this planet.
And then the counter argument would also be true. So in places where there isn't innovation taking place, that could simply be due to the fact that the innovation system doesn't support this, and that the elements of the innovation system simply doesn't promote innovation or stimulate companies to compete.
Well, I think we would still tend to argue that you have an innovation system pretty much anywhere. Yeah. So let's take North Korea. So it's definitely not a system that is encouraging innovation in any way, but still there would be something resembling an innovation system and supporting the kind of change that they are having in their companies.
So let's look at the main elements of an innovation system, the main elements that creates and shapes innovation.
Well, there is a perspective that I have started to formulate actually quite some time ago as I was going through the literature on innovation systems. And I think what is a fair way to describe an innovation system is by pointing out that there is four pillars that any given innovation system rests on. And I think we should look at the fact that there's national innovation systems, regional innovation systems, and sectoral innovation systems later in this conversation. But all of those basically rest on four different pillars. The first pillar are companies, what is happening inside companies, or if you're in a rural area, what is happening around producers, what producers are doing. The second pillar is the framework conditions, the political, economic, societal framework conditions that are creating the incentives, but also the distortions and the obstacles for innovation behavior of companies and producers. Then the third pillar are organizations that specifically focus at innovation, such as technology, all different types of technology-related organizations, from research and development to applied research to technology demonstration to technology transfer, technology extension, and so on and so on. And then the fourth pillar is the whole education and training system, all the different organizations involved in education, training, ongoing training.
What we often find when we talk to people about innovation systems, we find that people think that innovation system is always this extremely formal system that is driven primarily by research institutions and by academics, and also by departments of science and technology in national governments. What is your perspective on this?
I think it's a somewhat distorted view. It's not entirely wrong, obviously, but it covers only part of the whole picture. Maybe let's quickly step back and ask where did this term come from? And how was this whole discussion started? I think it was a book that came out approximately 20 years ago, where at least I saw that term for the first time. It was a book by Christopher Freeman, where he looked at Japan and he described the very surprising, the very dynamic performance of Japan in those days using the concept of an innovation system. And then there was a lot of research that was done on innovation systems, initially looking at national innovation systems. Now, the way I look at that research is like this. Those guys started their research by assuming that they would find a set of organizations, like you just said, technology-related organizations, research lab, technology transfer agencies, strategic technology development programs and entities, higher education institutions, all sort of specialized training providers, and so on, and that they would be able to trace the relationships between them and thus describe the innovation system as kind of a tangible system, a visible system that manifests itself in buildings and in the people that are working in those buildings. However, as they did that research and as they compared a couple of countries, what they found was that the innovation pattern and the behavior regarding innovation between countries was profoundly different. They didn't only look at advanced countries, they also looked at a couple of newly industrializing countries like Korea and Taiwan and Brazil and Argentina. And they found, I mean, that was in the early 90s, they found that the performance in Korea and Taiwan was so fundamentally different from that of Argentina and Brazil, and that again was fundamentally different from that of advanced countries. And what they basically detected was how absolutely crucial the macroeconomic and political framework conditions are. So when you look at national innovation systems, you are to some extent looking at the way in which a given country organizes its research system, in which a given country sets up technology institutions, in which a given country decides to set up its education system. But when we look at the first pillar, which is what are companies doing? How are companies behaving? How and why are they innovating? Then this is primarily not driven by technology policy or technology institutions, but this is driven by economic framework conditions. To what extent do companies have to compete? To what extent are they under a pressure because they have to compete all the time to innovate all the time? And the differences in framework, in those framework conditions, in generic economic framework conditions, are, I think, the key issue that you would look at a national level, before you look at all those other things. Because the other factors, the way in which the technology system is structured and organized, the way in which education is or is not addressing the needs of the productive sector, that has a lot to do with the overall economic framework conditions.
So let's say there's an instance where the economic framework conditions are healthy and the firms are reasonably competitive. So there is enough pressure on them to compete and to innovate. But there's no relationship between industry and these technology institutions and research bodies. Would that then be a problem? And what would the side effects of that be?
Well, that would definitely be a problem, because the companies would have to survive in competitive markets based all on their own internal efforts, while their competitors from elsewhere would face a much richer environment. Whenever they would be facing any kind of problem, they would move to some technology institute and say, look, this is the problem. Can you just quickly sort this out? Can you quickly find out what is behind this? And there would be other types of technology organizations that would engage in more medium or long-term and applied research and come up with interesting ideas, helping companies based on constant interaction with companies, trying to find out how companies can become more productive, more competitive. So, yeah, you definitely would have a problem if you find that, in a way, there is a system, except that when you start tracing the feedback loops, you find that many feedback loops don't really exist, because neither is there direct communication, nor is there some kind of tacit or implicit communication going on where, say, technology institutes try to relate what they are doing to what the productive sector actually needs. And, well, come to think about it, when you look at a given country, you will typically find that inside that country there's a couple of different regional or territorial innovation systems, and then also sectoral innovation systems, which are obviously overlapping to some extent. And that then gives you an idea of the diversity of innovation systems that you have within the framework of a national innovation system.
So what you are saying is that in one place, firms could be very competitive because the innovation system in that place could be very different from the innovation system just a couple of kilometers away in another place.
Yeah, that is exactly what is happening. When you look at the performance of high-growth regions anywhere in this world, really, you will typically find that they have thriving and very robust and as well both deep and wide structures within their innovation system. I mean, one of my favorite examples has always been this ceramic tile cluster in Castellón in Spain that I did research about a couple of years ago, where we found that they locally had over time created a very, very sophisticated structure of organizations, not just around technological hardware, but also around issues like design and innovation based on design, and all the necessary skills development organizations that were highly specialized, highly focused at the needs of that cluster, and that were operating at different skills levels and providing the kind of highly specialized workers, technicians, engineers, designers, managers that were needed by those companies. And, I mean, you move out of that cluster 20, 30 kilometers, and you're in a rural area where the term innovation wouldn't ring a bell.
And then at the same time, because of the overlaps and the relationships between these different innovation systems, we've also seen cases where when firms don't receive the support they need from their direct environment, that they start connecting to innovation systems elsewhere. So we've recently heard of firms in South Africa that are interacting with technology institutions in Germany simply because they get a very specific kind of support from Germany that they cannot get in, say, the South African environment.
Well, I think what is implicit in what you just said is that there are two phenomena that we are observing currently. The one phenomenon is that apart from national innovation systems, there is also in a way, well, let's say sectoral innovation systems that are globalizing. So in a specific sector, you would find that local or regional or national entities are losing importance over time, and that global structures are gaining importance. At the same time, and that is, I think, is a quite ironic observation, of course, these things are not positioned on ships that are floating on an ocean somewhere, and they are also not randomly scattered in countries and places across the planet. But they are typically part of local clusters or local innovation systems or regional innovation systems that have evolved over time and that have become extremely high-performance innovation systems over time. So you would also find, I mean, coming back to my Spanish example, you would also find that foreign companies in that same sector set up affiliates in that cluster in order to tap into that innovation system, because the innovation place there and the competency of the organizations there is so leading edge that anybody who is not interacting there locally at that level is going to lose out in the competitive race.
What I think is quite strange about this whole phenomena is that firms that can innovate then have incentives to tap into innovation systems where they get the best support. And due to a lack of clear policy or strategy or a incoherent technology strategy, say at a national level, the majority of firms could actually be excluded from access to this simply because of a lack of technology institutions and, let's say, applied research and specialization within their home country, in a way then leading to further increases in the wealth gap. And in a country like South Africa, there's a small group of firms that are busy competing all over the world at a very high-tech level, and they are using resources from elsewhere.
That is very true, and I think it's a very important statement. And there's also other examples that reinforce this observation. For instance, Italian industry has fallen behind in the innovation race in recent years. And that's a very important but also troublesome statement or observation. Because for a long time we thought that those famous Italian clusters or industrial districts where in a given locality you have hundreds of highly specialized small and medium-sized companies that used to be extremely competitive. And everybody thought that this was kind of an alternative model of organizing competitive production where even small and medium-sized companies could compete at a global scale. Well, what we've seen in recent years is that these clusters are battling, the companies in these clusters are battling to do what we have just described, namely to tap into innovation systems, sectoral innovation systems that are organized at a global scale, because these companies are small and they cannot afford to quickly set up a laboratory or an affiliate company in some other faraway country. And as a consequence, the innovation competence and the innovation behavior, the ability to constantly innovate inside those clusters is suffering, and the competitiveness of those clusters is suffering. And that is one of the big challenges that, for instance, Italian industry is facing right now. And I don't think that they have a solution for that.
So, Jörg, let's bring this discussion back to the field of development. And let's just look at what we can do. So we know that we often in clusters or when we work with value chains or in a specific territory, we look at firms and how competitive they are. And we often find that there's a few firms that are competitive and a couple that are doing really remarkable innovations, perhaps at an ad hoc basis, not so often on a very formal basis. We often in development at a local and a regional level find then that these firms are not connected with the tertiary and the education institutions, which could be our first challenge. That the professors at these education institutions think they are too clever for industry, or that due to pace of change, they are just not up to date. And then I must correct myself, then say that the education problem is from primary education all the way through. So we're not just talking about universities. Then we have the third dimension, which are these technology institutions and applied research organizations and specialized institutions, of which very often when we work in local and regional economic development, we find that they are in the urban centers. And even if they are in the urban centers, they are not necessarily connected to either the firms nor to the universities. So we find that it's a very fragmented landscape. So how do we approach this kind of a problem?
Maybe let me first come back to one of the statements that you just made. I think it's interesting to see that a recent study found that 80% of the global investment in research and development in the private sector is accounted for by the 1,000 biggest spenders. So 1,000 large companies worldwide spend 80% of the total R&D investment in the private sector. And that tells you that those people are driving the formal side, whereas what we are looking at is more this kind of, well, tacit activities, ongoing activities that are often not recognized and not measured as research and development, but still establish an ongoing innovation effort.
You mean things like experimentation, trying different things?
Well, you could say tinkering, which I think should have a very positive connotation, because that is what SMEs often do, and it's often a very important way in which they constantly find ways of upgrading their products or their production process. But let us come back to what you just said. So when we're looking at a territorial level, well, we have those. Sometimes we find that there are these major companies that can easily tap into organizations anywhere on this planet, but we have all those other guys who cannot do that. And then we have this massive fragmentation, and that often has to do with the fact that we are facing an innovation system, and especially technology organizations and education and training organizations in the national innovation system, that are kind of shaped by national policies and that are not directed, that haven't been set up with regional specialization or with territorial specialization in mind. When you look at the performance of clusters like that one in Spain that I'd like to refer to, well, that has been a bottom-up process. I mean, it was the local guys there lobbying to get a world-class technology institute. It was the local guys there taken an effort to set up a world-class design education organization. So bottom-up investment, rather than your typical top-down policies where central government says, well, we need a nanotechnology institute now because everybody has a nanotechnology institute now. And then they put it in some place pretty randomly because that is where the deputy minister happens to come from. And he feels that he has to do something for his home region, but there is absolutely no customer for such an organization. So you often have this mismatch in many countries between the institutional structure around technology and around education and training and what is happening at a territorial scale, which is creating one of the challenges that we then typically face, because it basically means then for us that we have to say, well, you see, there is not only fragmentation, but there is also a structural issue here, which is mismatch. So we can only improve things over a certain period of time. We cannot just easily try to address fragmentation. But we have to think about things such as, well, if there is this research institute 2,000 kilometers away that might be really relevant for our locality, but it's 2,000 kilometers away, so there is no easy communication face-to-face going on all the time. So, well, is there any chance that we can lobby with them to set up a satellite operation in our locality so that a couple of those guys are acting locally and we can interact with them much more easily in the way high-performance clusters would do it? So that would then take us into much more strategic and much more long-term intervention. So often when we are looking at a local innovation systems like we do with our RALIS exercises, when we do a rapid appraisal of a local innovation system, there's a certain amount of fragmentation that we find that we can kind of address easily and that we can sort out in the course of a couple of months, where then training institutions start to come up with training courses that are much more focused at local need, short-term courses that are much more focused at local need, where we start to build stronger relationships between companies and universities so that those guys understand how to adapt their curricula, how to cater for the needs of producers and companies, that they start to place students into companies, so that a much stronger interaction is evolving over time. So there's a couple of things that we can do along those lines. But then there's also a couple of much more strategic, much more difficult interventions that will take much more time.
Okay, Jörg, well, I think that is enough for this discussion. It's already quite a lot of things that we've discussed. So perhaps next time we can look at some of the other topics like technology transfer or perhaps even a practical case where we've looked at an innovation system.
Yeah, and maybe we should use this opportunity to direct people at our website, which is MISO Partners' website, www.misopartner.com, because we do have a couple of such documents there, including more conceptual stuff, where we have elaborated on some of these ideas that we've discussed just now.
And perhaps a last closing comment is that we are planning to respond specifically to issues of our listeners. So if you have any specific topic or issue or myth that you want us to discuss, then please send us an email or even just type it in on the website in the comment block so that we can respond to that, because your comments are really useful to us to structure our shows.